Greetings. March 29th, 2016. It's the Great One himself. Doing a little book discussion, getting started with this. I want to mention, I'm also right now currently reading the book Data and Goliath. I can't remember the name of the author. I don't have the book here at the studio. It's about your internet and computer privacy and how it doesn't exist and the ways in which your information is being sold and used and abused and the way the NSA is spying on you and all that other stuff. I'm not that far into it yet. I think I'm like 60 pages, but it's really good so far. Definitely worth reading. You can scream and shout with all your might. And you can scream, shout, whine, cry, snivel, piss, moan, look for a safe space. Dig in your heels and hold on tight. You can shove your opinion up your ass. That way Obama's cock has something to keep it company. Don't forget, the ever-present and the most likely third possibility, you are wrong and I am right. I am the Great One himself. I am the founder of the Cynical Libertarian Society. I've been on the internet since 1999. Been podcasting for 11 years. I do a thing called thinking. It's a concept that you as a statist are not familiar with. This is Stating the Obvious Podcast, the weapons platform. Missile of my intellect, the nuclear tipped stupidity-seeking cruise missile that homes in on and destroys statists all over the fucking world. We launch it, and it's up there. When you hear somebody say, "Who would build the roads?" the cruise missile homes right in on this person and fucking destroys them. Who would build the roads? Oh my God! There were no government, there'd be no fucking roads. We'd all just fucking die, because there'd be no roads. And how would you get your new iPhone manufactured by slave labor over in China? Oh, but I forgot, but you care about the children and you recycle your water bottles because, oh, you care about the environment so much. All right, anyway, Data and Goliath. Another book I'm reading, which is really good. I actually broke down and I ordered a copy of the book from Amazon.com. It's called The Definitive Book of Body Language by Alan and Barbara Peace, P-E-A-S-E. And it's a really good book about body language. And I will give you a trigger warning. This book explains that there are differences between men and women, and sometimes they make reference to the fact that men and women evolved differently to do different things. So if you are a femistatist, if you are gender fluid, if you think that male and female is a social construct, if you believe in global warming but not in evolution because you're into science and all this other stuff, this book will trigger you. You will be very fucking triggered by this book. However, if you're a normal person who doesn't have your head shoved up your ass with Obama's cock, it's a very enlightening and interesting book. It explains why people do things they do. I'm also listening to the audiobook version by the same authors of... what the hell is the name of the book? Fuckers. Why Men Don't Ask Directions and Women Always Need New Shoes? Something like that. If you just look for the authors, you will find their books. Anyway, listen to the audiobook version. Again, it's Alan and Barbara Pease, P-E-A-S-E. That book is also very good, and it's got the good shit in there, like the 7 questions about women that men ask and the 7 questions about men that women ask. Which, anyway, it's all very enlightening. And again, trigger warning, if you think there's no difference between men and women, this book will trigger the fuck out of you. You will be so fucking triggered that you will be unable to function probably for years. I mean, you will need professional psychiatric help if you're one of these fucking genderqueer, gender fluid, fucking male and female is a social construct designed by the patriarchy to oppress people and has no basis in biology. If you're one of those people, you will be triggered and you will be triggered harshly. And if you are triggered by things like that, I'm not really sure why you're listening to this podcast. I can only assume that you are truly fucking stupid. Because this podcast is for intelligent, thoughtful people whom can certainly disagree with anything I say, any opinion I present, any data I present, any ideas I toss out, but they disagree with me based on reason, logic, empirical data, thoughtfulness, philosophical reasoning. They don't disagree with me based on emotion, which I'll talk about this in the future, but like the whole Donald Trump, I've still yet to find anybody who can articulate a reason. And God, I'm gonna have to make fun of Scott Adams even more, because he just keeps writing stupid shit. In one of his recent blog posts, I know this is not what I'm supposed to, but thank you. In the control room is the lovely and adorable Randy, who's reminding me that this is not what I'm supposed to be talking about. And what's funny is that I said to Randy, I said, all right, today I'm not gonna fuck around. We're getting straight into the topic matter and we're gonna go. I'm not gonna bullshit for the first 15 minutes of the podcast. Here we are, we're 6 minutes in and I'm bullshitting. And she's reminding me of this. That's fine, that's what she's here for. That's why we love her. You can send us email at God, that's dog spelled backwards, God at CYNLIBSOC.com. You can send, excuse the fuck out of me, excuse me. You can send us naked pictures of yourself if you are an attractive man. Randy enjoys those. And you can send pictures of yourself if, naked pictures only of yourself if you are an attractive woman, especially if you're a volleyball girl. And the beverage of the day is 1554 Black Lager from New Belgium Brewery here in the People's Republic of Fort Collins. What was that? Oh, Scott Adams. That's what I was talking about. Scott Adams wrote another blog post where, and I'm paraphrasing from memory, trust me, I will make fun of this later, but as I recall, he said the reason he was against Donald Trump is because his friends are scared of Donald Trump. And this is all, there's not one fucking person yet who has been able to articulate to me a logical, rational, objective, coherent reason that Donald Trump is not capable of being president of the United States. As I've said before, I could probably come up with 100 reasons Donald Trump shouldn't be president. I'm not saying he should be president. There should be no president, yada, 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 anarcho-capitalism, and capitalist statism, blah, blah. Okay, but tossing all that aside and just going, yes, in November of this year, somebody will be elected president, and I say it will be Hillary Clinton. Somebody's going to get it. I mean, despite the fact that there are a plethora of logical, rational, coherent reasons Donald Trump shouldn't be president, nobody has been able yet to present one of them. The only things I hear, Donald Trump, okay, he's a racist. Well, we don't have any particular evidence of this. You can show, right? He's endorsed by the Ku Klux Klan. Well, so is Obama. Senator Robert Byrd, former member and recruiter for the Ku Klux Klan, endorsed Hussein Obama for president. He's scary, which is simply, it's not a description of Donald Trump. That's a description of your emotional response to Donald Trump. Right? Like, if I say that the tarantula spider is scary, I'm not describing the spider. I'm describing my emotional response to the spider. And of course, people say, well, he's going to build a wall and stop immigration, which of course, Australia stops immigration, Israel stops immigration. I mean, there's all sorts of countries that stop immigration, and there's countries that build walls, China built a wall. I mean, as I've said before, there's not going to be a fucking physical wall. There's no way he's actually gonna get away with building that. But I mean, this is it. This is all there is. He's racist, he's scary. Oh, and he's a misogynist. He doesn't like women because he doesn't allow women to shit in his face. I mean, but all of this is just emotion. Nobody yet has come up with, bankruptcy. So they said that Donald Trump is another, Donald Trump lost all his money and went bankrupt and his family bailed him out. Okay, like, this is bad because, of course, the government, Hussein Obama, has never bailed out corporations that made bad decisions. When Donald Trump made bad decisions, and I have no idea what the history is on this, and I'm tangenting like a motherfucker, which I said I wasn't going to do. When Donald Trump made these bad decisions, whatever they were, I don't know, that led to him going bankrupt, assuming this actually happened. I haven't researched it. I don't know. Let's assume for the moment it's true. If his family showed up and bailed him out, let's assume that that is true. Okay. Well, his family bailed him out with their money, not with taxpayer money, the way Obama and Bush bailed out Wells Fargo and the banking corporations and the... So, I mean, what's the big deal about going bankrupt and getting bailed out? That's a fucking American corporate tradition. The government bails corporations out all the fucking time. It's all emotion. Speaking of emotion, let's get to today's subject matter. The book, Dateonomics, by John Bringer? I don't know how to pronounce his name correctly. B-I-R-G-E-R. Berger. God, I'm going to mutilate. I'm going to stop while I'm ahead and don't embarrass myself any more than I already am. Now, Stefan Molyneux did an interview with the author, and I will provide linkage, if I remember, I will embed that in the show notes. You'll be able to go check it out. Again, the book is called Dateonomics, How Dating Became a Lopsided Numbers Game. Now, this is an interesting book to me because there's a lot of empirical data in here, and there's a lot of emotion in here, and there's a lot of bullshit in here, and there's a lot of social conditioning. I very highly recommend you read this book and separate the good shit from the bullshit. All right, here we go. Let's just get started. I have only have 2 pages of notes, but still, I have a feeling this podcast will be at least a 3-parter because there's a lot to talk about here. All right, page 1, we're starting right at the beginning with the chapter 1, the man deficit. Here we go. My friend Sarah Donovan is a gem. She's kind, she's funny, she's an Ivy Leaguer and a head turner too. Professionally, Sarah is a star, a top journalist as well as a familiar face and voice on television and radio. Sarah is also 41 years old and unmarried. And it is this predicament, one that saddens Sarah, perplexes her friends, and frustrates her parents, that is the catalyst for this book. American cities are filled with Sarah Donovans. Educated, successful, personable, often attractive women whose dating woes make little sense to those around them. Okay, boys and girls. Sarah Donovan's woes make perfect sense to anybody who's not stupid. Okay? Look, and here's through this whole book, he gushes over all these women that he knows or that he's met. And all of these women, oh, they're so accomplished and they're so intelligent and they have some great personalities and they're so beautiful. And he just can't figure out why they're single. Oh, wait, and they're all old. Now, I know that you think a 41-year-old woman is in her prime. I know that you think men are supposed to be falling all over themselves for 41-year-old women. You think that because you're a fucking moron. Let me explain this to you. Okay. All right, now, she's a professional. Where's this fucking quote? Let me find this predicament, blah, blah, blah. Right, okay. American cities are filled with women who are educated. Okay, as I and many other people have explained to you before, men do not give a fuck about your education. This is the classic example, and this is why reading the books by Alan and Barbara Pease about body language and the differences between men and women, this is why this is important. Because those of you who are feminist cunts, those of you who are statist, and I include in this the author of this book, whose name I can't fucking pronounce because I'm a moron. I'm going to call him John so I don't embarrass myself by trying to pronounce his last name anymore. John doesn't understand this, even though he claims to have a penis, and in the Stefan Molyneux video, we see his face. He looks like a man, but of course, to assume somebody is a man just because they look like a man, I mean, that would be transphobic. Men do not give a fuck about a woman's education level. Women think men care about how much education they have because women care about how much education men have because women link more education to more money. Women want men who can give them free resources. Trigger fucking warning, reality. Okay? Women do not marry men who ride the fucking public transportation. Women want, unless they're really, really fucking poor, ugly, and fat, okay? So, men do not give a fuck about your woman's education level. So, her educated, it's irrelevant. The next thing, American cities are filled with Sarah Donovans. They're educated, they're successful. Successful at what? You mean a career? Okay, women care about men's careers. Why? Because career translates into money. What do women want from men? They want resources. Men do not give a fuck about a woman's career. When a woman comes up to me and she says, well, I have a PhD and I make $1 million a year, I'm not impressed by that. Now, if she's also physically attractive, and physically attractive does not include 41. I know you think that women are attractive at 41, John. I understand that I think he's married. I'm pretty sure he's married. I remember him saying he's married in the book and in the video. And you're a femisimp and you're a beta male. I know that you think 41-year-old women are sexually attractive to men because you have been socially conditioned to believe that and because you are afraid of saying the truth, which is that 41-year-old women are not sexually attractive to men. Okay, I am not afraid of saying the truth because I'm not trying to be anybody's friend. And this is the beauty of not needing attention on the internet and needing likes on Facebook and needing praise and being an attention whore. I don't care if you're my friend or not. I am saying the truth. I am a man. I have a cock. I have two balls. I like women. I like to fuck women. I look at women. I see a woman and most, you know, if she's I instantly start thinking about fucking her. I fuck women whenever possible. It hasn't been much lately, but that's my problem. Right. I'm here to tell you the number of 41-year-old women I have seen who are sexually attractive is about 3. There's 3.5 billion women on the planet Earth. There's about 3 of them who are 41 years old and physically sexually attractive. And I promise you, your friend Sarah Donovan is not one of them. And throughout this entire book, John just basically, here is the thesis of the book summed up. The book is about, in like one sentence, the book is about how men can be fixed so that they make better marriage material for old women. That's what this book is about. How to fix men. Because remember, women are objects, they're not agents. Women can't change. Men need to change in order to make themselves more presentable to old women so that the old women will want to marry them. This book, despite the fact that it has very good empirical data in it, is just femisimping. Okay, so these women, they're educated, which, as I said, men don't care about. They're successful, men don't care about. And they're personable. Okay, personable doesn't make a man want to have rabid sex with you. Now, here's the thing. We've got Sarah. She's so good looking, and she's kind, and she's funny, and she's a star, and she's a journalist. Okay, so, and she's 41, and she's unmarried. So let's look at this for a minute. Who in the fuck does Sarah think is going to marry her? Here are her options. She can... computer's fucking up. Well, I'm fucking up. There are men in her age range, okay? Say a 41-year-old man. A 41-year-old man who is successful, who is, in her eyes, worthy of her. And what we're going to hear from John in this book is how more men need to go to college so that they will be marriage material for these old women who can't find men who want them. If there's a 41-year-old man, he has a good education, a good job, and he's making good money, he is not interested in a 41-year-old woman who has this career and all this other shit where he's never going to, where he's likely not going to be able to spend much time with her because she's devoted to her career just like he's doing his career. And she's 41 years old and she's old. Okay, I know, trigger fucking warning. I know you think that 41 is young for a woman. It's not. A 41-year-old man with his shit together is banging 25-year-old women. He's dating 25-year-old women. He is not going to waste his time with a 41-year-old woman. He's not. And I know it hurts your feelings. I don't fucking care. This is reality. So the only 41-year-old men that are available to, what's this bitch's name? Sarah. And of course, all the names have been changed in this book. We know that. So the 41-year-old men that are available to Sarah are the 41-year-old men who cannot date 25-year-old women. Why can they not date 25-year-old women? Well, it's because they're not physically attractive, or they don't have very good personalities, or they got no game, or because they got no money. If they had those things, they'd be dating 25-year-old girls, right? So that is the pool of 41-year-old men that are available to Sarah. But Sarah's not going to date those men. They're not physically attractive. They don't have enough money. They don't have as much college as she does. But of course, we know that women aren't shallow and conceited like men are. No, of course not. And of course, for you to date Sarah Donovan, you have to be at least 6'1" because she can't date any short men because, you know, she's not shallow or anything like men because, you know, men are really shallow and they only want to date women who are physically attractive. And of course, women are not shallow at all. They just only date men who are 6'1" or higher because, you know, height is really important when you're choosing a life partner and you want to get married. And this is why he's going to say all the shit in this book. A lot of it is empirically true. There's a lot of things I agree with. Yada, yada. Ultimately, here is why Sarah Donovan and all these other women just like her are single. It's because they've spent their entire 41 fucking years working on their career and their education, and men don't give a shit about that. Men don't fucking care. And you have devoted your entire life to enhancing and developing attributes which now, and let, hold on, I need to drink a beer. Again, let me be very specific. She spent her entire life, much of her life, developing the attributes of education and career. I'm not saying those are bad attributes to develop. Not saying that. What I am saying is this. If your goal is to find a man who is willing to marry you and spend the rest of his life with you, developing your career and your education are not going to further that goal. I like women. Now, if I sit at home and I play computer games all day long, I am developing and enhancing my skill set at playing computer games, okay? But that is not useful for finding a woman, at least not a normal woman. I know there are women out there, I like computer games, I like to play Halo. Oh, shut up, bitch. I have no interest in hanging out with a woman who wants to sit around playing computer games. And once in a while, that's fine. But I play Halo every day. Well, you're a fucking loser, just as you would be a loser if you were a fucking fat guy in your mom's basement eating Cheetos and playing Halo all fucking day. Okay? If that's really the extent of your life, you're a fucking loser. Okay? So being better at computer games isn't going to help me find a girl. focusing on your career and education, it's not going to help you find a man. Because men don't give a shit about those things. I read somewhere, some time ago, somebody made this analogy. The person, I think it was one of the blogs that I read regular, I can't remember who it was. The question they asked, the question they posed, was essentially this. Would you, as a man, rather date Scarlett Johansson or a waitress who looks like Scarlett Johansson? And you can insert whatever, you know, movie star or, you know, woman, whatever that you personally find attractive. And this, the writer posited that most men would rather date the waitress who looks like Scarlett Johansson, because Scarlett Johansson has all these commitments, she has things she has to do, she's going away for filming, right? She has to go to events, all this, and you're not going to get quality time with this woman. Whereas the waitress, I mean, she has a job and she makes some money, but you know you're going to be able to spend time with her. She can get, and this is what's important to men in a woman, right? Women look at men as, my God, trigger warning, let me repeat myself, a way to get free resources. Women expect men to give them money. The man doesn't have to be there to give them the money, and in fact, many women probably prefer the man is not there. They just want the fucking money. Men, on the other hand, I can say this because I'm a man. If you're, and I'm not talking about like fuck buddies and stuff like that, that's different. If you are dating a woman, when I am dating a woman, which I am not currently dating a woman, I've dated women, right? When I am dating a woman, I want to spend time with her. I want to be in the same place with her, doing things, and I don't just mean sex. Yes, sex, but other things. Go play pinball, go hiking, go bike riding, sit on the couch and cuddle, watch a fucking movie, set something on fire in the kitchen, which I'm good at, right, Randy? Okay, we want to do things with women. And women, I'm going to get my PhD, and I got a career, and I work 60 hours a week, and oh, you go, girl. No, we don't give a fuck. We're not interested. Sorry, I'm not going to be second fiddle to your fucking college education and your career. And trigger fucking warning. That's reality. That's why all these fucking 41-year-old women that John gushes about throughout this entire book, there's just one after another, and I met this woman, and she's so beautiful, and she's got a great job, and she has all this money, and she's just so beautiful, and she's 43 years old, and I can't figure out why she's single. I've just explained to you why she's single. Because real, actual men, not femisims, not beta males, not losers, actual men who want to marry women, not talking about fuckboys, you know, players, alpha males, pickup artists, good, decent, normal, mentally balanced, well-adjusted men who are interested in marrying a woman and spending their life with this woman do not give a fuck about your education and your career. They don't. They don't. I know Oprah told you different. Oprah is lying to you so that you will fucking buy her shit. Their stories are well chronicled in novels, movies, and TV shows, from Bridget Jones' Diary to Sex and the City to Girls. Okay, John, TV is not real. Sex and the City is not a documentary. On screen, these tales usually have happy endings. In real life, it's not so easy. Quote, come to think of it, I don't think I've ever had someone ask me if they knew any nice girls for their son, unquote, said Jeffrey Cirkman, a longtime rabbi at Larchmont Temple in Larchmont, New York, and a keen observer of the marriage market. Quote, but just about every week some mother or father will ask me whether I know any nice guys for their daughter. Why is that? Unquote. Why indeed? Why is it that women like Donovan struggle to find marriage material men, even as male counterparts with less going for them seem to have little trouble with the opposite sex? Well, part of the reason, again, is because these fucking 41-year-old women who you think are so amazing are fucking 41 years old. And their standards are way too high for what kind of men are willing to marry them. Attempts to answer such questions have spawned a cottage industry of self-help books for women, dating guides that portray the failure to find Mr. Right as a strategic problem, one that can be fixed by playing hard to get, that's going to work, or following a few simple dating rules. Underlying all such advice is an assumption that the perceived shortage of college-educated men, a phenomenon that I call the man deficit, is actually a mirage. At birth, there are more boys than girls. 1.05 boys are born for every one girl. So if college-educated women just become better daters, if they can get inside men's heads and understand what makes them commit, then that, there should be enough college-educated men out there for everyone. But what if the problem is not strategic? What if most of the good men are taken? What if a disproportionate number of single guys out there really are incorrigible commitment phobes just looking for a good time? Yes, see, what if men are not willing to throw out their lives and get married to these women? My God, how dare those men fucking think? How dare these men be commitment phobes? What the fuck is wrong with them? And throughout this book, again, throughout this book, you will hear all the about how men need to improve themselves, and men need to do this, and men just aren't good enough. I think there's one time in the whole book where John mentions, hey, maybe the 40-year-old women need to lower their standards a little. Right? There's nothing, the 40-year-old women, there's nothing they need to do to fucking change who and what they are, who and what they expect. It's all dumped on men. More men need to go to college. More men need to be willing to be committed to marriage. More men need to, it's the same as feminism all the time. Hashtag he for she. Women are equal, but only if men bring the equality to us. Because we can't go get the fucking equality ourselves because women are objects, not agents. What if it doesn't just seem as if there's a third more single women than men in every semi-upscale bar in Manhattan or Dallas or LA? What if the demographics actually bear that out? What if the hookup culture on today's college campuses and the wild ways of big city single scenes have little to do with changing values and a whole lot to do with the lopsided gender ratios that pressure 19-year-old girls to put out and discourage 30-year-old guys from settling down? What if, in other words, the man deficit were real? Now, those of us who aren't stupid know that the man deficit, as he's defining it, and he hasn't really defined it, but I'll explain a little more his criteria here for you. It's not, and again, it's not that there's fewer men, it's that there's fewer college-educated men. Because you see, these college-educated women with these careers can only marry college-educated men. Now, unless you're just completely oblivious to the world around you, you know, you've heard this from me, you've heard this from Stefan Molyneux, you've heard this from Aaron Clary, you've heard this from assorted other people, you've heard this from many sources, and if you think I'm making this up, you can go confirm this with typing some shit into Google. More women than men are getting college educations. So if the criteria, so you have a woman and she has a college education, and her number one criteria, and it is, the criteria she has for a man, in addition, he has to be 6'1", all this other shit, she can't marry a man who doesn't have a college education. And more women than men have college educations. It's math, honey. And I know math is the patriarchy, math is oppression, math was designed by heterosexual white men who work for a living to oppress you. If college-educated women are only going to marry men who have college educations, and if there are more women with college educations than men with college educations, and remember, men don't care a shit, a man with a college education will marry a woman who is a waitress in a heartbeat if she's pretty, if she's nice to him, if she's pleasant to be around, if she cares, because that's what we want, that's what we're interested in. We do not give a fuck. We do not give a flying fuck, you stupid 41-year-old cunt. We do not give a fuck about your career and your education. We do not give a fuck. We do not give a fuck about your career and your education. Trigger fucking warning. Okay? College-educated men will marry women who graduated from high school in a heartbeat. So not only are there more college-educated women than college-educated men, but some of the college-educated men just automatically take themselves out of the pool by marrying a woman who doesn't have a college diploma. Yes, if your criteria for the man you're going to marry, the number one criteria is he's got to have a college education, yeah, there's not enough men, honey. There is a fucking man shortage, you stupid bitch. The rocket science here is non-existent. There is no fucking rocket science. It's just math. It's supply and demand, another thing that women cannot fucking grasp. It's like, oh, I have a hole between my legs. It's impossible for me to understand supply and demand. I want a man who's 6'2" and has a PhD and has a good career, and I should just get that because I have a hole between my legs. What if, in other words, the man deficit were real? Well, it is real. And the numbers are so shocking, it's a wonder they are not talked about incessantly. According to 2012 population estimates from the U.S. Census Bureau's American Community Survey, there are 5.5 million college-educated women in the United States between the ages of 22 and 29, versus 4.1 college-educated men between 22 and 29. Now, for those of you who have a hole between your legs and can't do math, 5.5 million is a larger number than 4.1 million. What that means is, if the 5.5 million women will only marry men their age with college educations, that means 1.4 million of them are not going to be getting married. They're not. That's called math. That's called patriarchy. See, that's oppression. I'm oppressing you right now by doing subtraction. I'm keeping you from getting that job. You go, girl. In other words, the dating pool for college graduates in their 20s really does have 33% more women than men, or 4 women for every 3 men. Among college graduates age 30 to 39, there are 7.4 million women versus 6.0 million men. That means 1.4 million women ages 30 to 39, where you're hitting the wall and becoming less attractive, are not going to get that college-educated man that they think wants to marry them. Not only that, but these college-educated men between 30 and 39, I have news for you, they're banging the women between 22 and 29. They're not banging the old chicks who are hitting the wall. Which is 5 women for every 4 men among the 30 to 39 group. These lopsided gender ratios may add up to sexual nirvana for heterosexual men, but for heterosexual women, especially those who put a high priority on getting married and having children in wedlock. Oh, wait, children in wedlock? Oh my God, that is so 50s. Like, we are so past that. Why should you have to be married to have children? God, that is the fucking patriarchy. Oh my God. Especially for those who put a high priority on getting married and having children in wedlock, they represent a demographic time bomb. I dropped the bomb on you. I dropped the bomb on you. How exactly did gender ratios for college? This is. Oh God, Randy, this is gonna be like a 7-parter. I'm not even past the first fucking 4 pages here. Jesus Christ. Oh, this is gonna be so much fun. How exactly did gender ratios for college educated? How exactly did gender ratios for the college-educated get so skewed? Well, the simple answer, and yeah, is that women have been attending college at a higher rate than men since the 1980s and a much higher rate since the late 1990s. Duh. That's why this should not be a surprise. If you are surprised by this, either you've never used the internet in your life, or you just like don't get out of the house. I mean, again, this is not a surprise unless you're stupid. In 2012, 34% more women than men graduated from 4-year colleges, and this gender gap in college education spilled over into post-college dating pool long ago. But of course, we know that women are of course constantly discriminated against, right? When it comes to college education, so that's why so many of them. More than men have college educations because of discrimination, rape culture, patriarchy, oppression, so forth and so on. The shortage of college-educated men. Again, see, notice there's a shortage of college-educated men. It's not too many college-educated women. It's not the unrealistic, based on the demographics, standards of college-educated women. No, see, those are not... The problem here is the shortage of college-educated men. Because, you see, you men are just not... You men need to man up and go to college and get that degree so that you're worthy of marrying these 41-year-old women that can't score a man. The shortage of college-educated men, a 1.4 million man deficit among 22 to 29-year-olds, has been exacerbated by increased reluctance of college-educated Americans to marry those lacking a college degree. According to separate research published by University of Pennsylvania economist Jerry Greenwood and by UCLA sociologist Christine Schwartz and Robert Mayer, educational intermarriage is less common today than at any other point in the past half century. I would be interested also in knowing of the educational intermarriages, which means, of course, you know, that a person with a college degree marrying, I assume, a person with not a college degree. I don't know how they're defining this. So like if you have a PhD and you marry somebody who only has an associate's, is that educational equivalency marriage, or is that educational non-equivalency marriage? Like, I don't know. I would be interested in knowing of the educational intermarriage, using the phrase that is in the book here, how many of those are men with college degrees and women without versus women without college degrees? I mean, men with college degree married to woman without, as opposed to woman with college degree married to man without. My thinking is that it would be significantly, over 60% easily, men with college degrees married to women without college degrees. As poor as the marriage market may be for educated 40-something women like my friend Sarah, the long-term outlook for young millennial women is decidedly worse. Hey, all you little 22-year-old whores right now riding the cock carousel, you might want to shut your mouth and listen for a minute. We're talking about you now. I know, right now you're 22 and you're on the cock carousel and you think, I'm just going to fuck everything that moves until I'm 35, 36, and then I'm going to find a man and I'm going to marry him and he's going to pay for everything for the rest of my life, and so I'm just going to like fuck every cock in sight right now because I'm strong and independent, but oh my god, I need a safe space, and I can't believe the great one is saying these things, and I'm going to go on YouTube and ban him like I did Davis Arini because I'm just so offended because I'm so strong and independent, and I can't stand it when somebody has an opinion that's different than mine because I'm so strong and independent and I can go, girl, because I'm like Oprah told me that I could do anything I wanted to do because like I'm so strong and independent and I'm on the cock carousel, like oh my god, like totally. It's like I was on Instagram the other day, I posted a selfie on Instagram and like I got likes and I was like, oh my god, I got likes and oh my god and like oh my god, and like people like they liked my selfie on Instagram because like oh my god. I need you to shut the fuck up about yourself for a minute, and you might want to listen to this, because we're talking about you. We're talking about your future as a fucking cat lady. In the United States, there are 39% more college graduate women age 24 and younger than men in the same age, according to census data. The man deficit is larger post-college than during college because foreign students are disproportionately male. In Manhattan, the pool of 24 and under college graduates has 38% more women than men.
I'm going to go to New York. And he does point this out. All these women who say, well, I'm going to go to New York and meet a man. And he points out that New York, Manhattan,
we'll get to the number. It's in here somewhere. There's way more single women than single men. If you're going to New York thinking you're going to meet a man, you are fucking up royal. It's like going to the hardware store to buy groceries. But women don't understand this because women can't do math. They can't do statistics. They can't do demographics. They can't do supply and demand. They can't do logic. This is why you're 41 years old and you're alone. In Raleigh, North Carolina, this is the gap between college-educated women and college-educated men under the 24 and under, okay? Raleigh, North Carolina, the gap is 49%. Miami and Washington, D.C., Miami, 86%. Say that again. The gap, college-educated men versus college-educated women versus men, 24 years old and younger, 84% gap in Miami. In the favor, depending on what you call favor, in the favor of men, there's fewer men than women. Washington, D.C., 49%. Los Angeles, 37%. Moreover, for reasons I'll explain later involving the demographic of the gay and lesbian community, the census numbers probably understate the true size of heterosexual gender gaps in LGBTQ KKK-friendly cities such as Miami, New York, and L.A. The bottom line is that by the time today's educated early 20s woman are ready to marry, I got strong and independent, right? They will be confronted with a marriage market far more daunting than the one their older cousins or younger aunts graduated into 20 years ago. Meanwhile, young male college graduates now enjoy such an overabundance of sexual options that it will be interesting to see when or if some of these men choose to settle down. Supply and demand. Guys, supply and demand. There's way more women than men. Why in the fuck would men want to get married when they're surrounded by available women who are so desperate for men that they will fuck at the drop of a hat? And we'll see the statistics and demographics bear this out. He presents the data in this book. When you have more women
than men, the women become whores. When you have more men than women, the women get to call the shots, and the more traditional, the evil from the 50s, the more which is interesting also, because as his data shows, when the women are fewer than the men and men have to compete for the women, the women, instead of being conch carousel riding whores, actually start imposing standards. Now, I'm not saying hypergamy isn't true and it doesn't exist. What I am saying is the information seems to indicate to us that hypergamy is certainly enhanced, or what's the opposite of enhanced? Decreased? Subdued? Hypergamous activity on the part of women can be enhanced or subdued based on the gender balance. When you have way more women than men, the hypergamy is enhanced because women are willing to, you know, spread their legs quick because they're trying to get a man and they're going to do whatever it takes. Anal sex, you know, ass to mouth, threesomes, whatever. But when you have an environment where there are fewer women than men, now the men have to compete for the women, and in those circumstances, female hypergamous nature seems to be somewhat decreased. They're less likely to put out, less likely to ride the cock carousel. What's interesting, and I need to go back and reread this to make sure I got this right, is over at Chateau Hartiz, on one of his more recent posts, he dropped a comment. It was just like one sentence, and that's, I need to go back and read this again to make sure I interpreted things right. But he seemed to indicate that he did not think male-to-female ratios have an effect on female hypergamy. And I was a little surprised by this. That's why it stuck in my mind, because to me, this is incredibly obvious, and I really would have thought, I thought that somebody as observant as the Chateau would have recognized this fact. So anyway, I'm going to look back into that, make sure I have my shit straight and I'm not bullshitting myself or anybody else. And that's it. So that was, you know, that was four pages. And yeah, this is going to be a long one. There's a lot more to come. All right. I'm always right. Oh, I forgot to do a trigger warning. Shit.